And joining us right now on the PMP Radio Network is the lovely, talented Melanie. Now, you remember Melanie from Woodstock. That's right. She sang Beautiful People and inspired the first panorama of candles and cigarette lighters ever raised at a concert event. Now, every concert you go to, people raise their lighters, right? But she also moved to sing and write a song about that experience called Lay Down Candles in the Rain, which sold more than a million copies, and one of them was to me, and prompted Billboard, Cashbox, Melody Maker, Record World, and Bravo to anoint her as the Female Vocalist of the Year back then. And she has done some incredible stuff. One of my favorites, though, is actually a cover that she did of the Rolling Stones song Ruby Tuesday. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our stage, Melanie. How are you?
Hi. Great.
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
It is a pleasure to have you. It's a pleasure to have you here. I'm a big, big fan of your music.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
And that's something, because it's not just your singing, but you are a writer, and you take this stuff and you bring it to the people, and I can't even imagine how you felt at Woodstock singing Beautiful People and getting that kind of reaction.
I know. Well, right before I went on, I was so scared that, and I'm really terror, that I didn't think I would live, you know. I thought this was it, you know. I was so hoping when it had started to rain, I had this sort of, I was in a reverie of maybe now the people will go home and it's raining. And then I won't have to go on. And then they'll all leave. And then I won't have to go on. And then I'll be finished. And then I can go back to my life the way it was. And I'm in this daydream. Because all day long they had been telling me, you're on next. And then they would say, never mind. So here I am in this state of, it's all going to be over. It's raining. The announcer made a thing that the candles are going to be lit, but that people will get to leave. Of course people leave. It's raining. So I'm in that moment, you know, when they came to get me. And boom, it was like my stomach fell, and I went and you literally did have to walk a plank. And it felt like that was it. You know, I'm walking to my doom.
And all you saw was a field of people forever, right?
Forever. And the candlelight was coming toward me. And, of course, it was raining, so they were flickering. And in this flickering light coming toward me. And, I mean, I sang Beautiful People, and I felt totally like I was in my room, you know, with people who were all my friends.
Yeah.
It was just incredible. I mean, really. I'll never forget that moment and that feeling. It's the feeling that I remember. You know, you can get dates and statistics wrong, because people would say, how old are you when you did Woodstock? I think I was 18. I'm wrong. I was 20-something. But the point is, you can get dates and statistics wrong, but you can never get the feeling wrong.
Yeah. Can you believe it? What was it? It was like 46 years ago, wasn't it?
Yes.
Wow.
I know.
It seems, even for me, as one of the guys who, I did not get there, but I even have a ticket for it, but I didn't get there, but I have the album, and I was really into the music, saw the movie many times, and felt like I was there almost, but 46 years ago, it seems like yesterday.
I know, incredible. Coming on to the 50th. Something wonderful happens.
You know, it's funny. They've tried to recreate Woodstock a number of times. They've had, but it was never.
No, you can't create something that just happened. I mean, it just happened. That's what happened. I didn't even know it was going to be a big deal. I just thought it was going to be this gathering, you know, with arts and crafts.
You know, when you were there, were you friendly with any of the other performers, and did you make friends with some of the other performers?
No, I wish I could say, you know, we all hung out, and it was good. Everybody was scared, everybody. There was sort of an upper echelon tent area where, I mean, the big names were. and they would come in right before they would go on. I was there all day, and they put me in this little other area where Tim Harden was, and I was right across from his tent. It was a little tent. I got a little tent with a dirt floor, a box, and that was it.
Wow.
So, no, I didn't, but I did have this one beautiful moment when I had developed this deep bronchial, it was a nervous cough, and Joan Baez must have heard me from somewhere, and she sent over her assistant or somebody, and the girl said, Joan heard you coughing and thought you might like this. And Joan Baez? I mean, no, I had never even met anyone famous before. I was in England before that. I was writing a film score, and I had the only person I had ever met who was a known person was Rod Stewart. And he wasn't even known as Rod Stewart yet. He was in The Faces.
Mm.
You know, so it wasn't like, and we were both performing at a club in England called The Revolution. And, but I was very shy. You know,
wow.
I'm an introvert, but I'm not really celebrity material, but, you know, so I always that moment when the photo op would come, I would go to the corner of the room or leave altogether. People had to chase me down to get pictures.
Well, you were a pioneer. You still are a pioneer, but you were an amazing pioneer. A lot of people don't know this, but you were the first solo or pop act ever to appear from the Royal Albert Hall to Carnegie Hall, Metropolitan Opera House, Sydney Opera House, and even the General Assembly of the United Nations.
Yes, that was the biggie. That was a life-turning event, because before that, I sort of felt I had lost my purpose, you know. I always wanted to be, I wanted to be in the Peace Corps. I wanted to be, I don't know, a social worker. I wanted to help. That was what I wanted to do, travel, help, be of use to people. And here I was, I met my husband, he was a record producer, and all of a sudden I'm a pop star. And it just didn't feel like I had lost my, I felt like I'd lost my purpose. So when they asked me to sing for the UN, I was amazed, really, thinking that I would be singing for the General Assembly. And I sang the song that I had just written, Peace Will Come.
Mm.
And I had no clue what kind of reaction, you know, I would get. I was just part of the festivities of the day. And they stood up, gave me a standing ovation. And that moment, I felt, I am doing what I'm supposed to do. This is doing something. You know, it's music, and it's, again, it's feeling. And the UN is the group. I mean, a lot of people, you know, it's and a lot of what they do is ineffectual. You know, I mean, people wonder, why do we still have war if we have a UN? It's, but what, it's there, and that's the important thing. And so I'm still, I'm a UN person. There were 30 human rights written after World War II to end war forever. And these human rights, if they were adhered to, or even anybody knew about, we would have peace on Earth, and that wouldn't be just like hippies in the field, you know, saying peace, man. It would be for real, because these are written. They're not enforced, but they're written, and with the blessings of every member of the UN. So I was amazed. I got in touch with this group. It's called Youth for Human Rights, and people don't know we have human rights. 30 of them. Mm. If you could name 3, I'd be amazed.
Well, the problem is that that many countries do have human rights, others don't have any.
Yeah.
You can write them down on a piece of paper.
We don't have, you know what? You'd be surprised at how many we don't have here.
Yeah, no, I understand that. But I'm saying that you can write them on a piece of paper. Doesn't mean you have them, unfortunately. As a peacemaker, I know that you are in the same vein as John Lennon. Really, you know, we're out there talking about peace will come in our lives. Please have some. And John Lennon talking about imagine the world, you know, at peace. Unfortunately, it seems in the world we're in right now that peace is the farthest thing from people's minds and countries' minds nowadays.
I know, but that's why I want to get these declarations of human rights into schools and ingrained in people's thinking as a reality. And perhaps will be as they become more real, will be able to be enforced.
Tell us some of those rights.
Oh, you're really stumping me. I don't. You'd be lucky, right? I mean, you tell me.
I don't know. I mean, I have no idea the list of 30.
Amazing.
I don't
it's
know.
30.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
It's incredible that we have, and what it is they're a little complicated to read, so that's why.
Oh, okay. Well, give us a couple of them.
Right to education.
Okay.
Right to education.
Now, see, in many countries in the Muslim world, women don't have a right to education at all. In fact, they're told no education.
Right. So. The right to participate in cultural life of the community, to enjoy the arts, and to share in scientific advancement and benefits.
Hmm. Well, I think we have that right.
Right to assemble, the right to free speech. Hmm.
Those are part of our Constitution.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, but in this country,
I know, but they were amazing, the people who were doing Occupy Wall Street.
Well, see, I think in this country we do have more rights than most countries, but no one has all of them, probably.
But you know what? We still have slavery in this country.
Yeah.
I mean, people are human trafficking.
Well, that's there is, slavery. Yes, you're right.
That's there, slavery.
Yeah, there is some of that going on in this country. We're talking with Melanie, of course, and we all remember Melanie from Woodstock, and I remember watching you on TV quite a bit in the days of Ed Sullivan, Johnny Carson, and Dick Cavett. And I loved the comment that Ed Sullivan made after you went on his show. He said he had not seen such a dedicated and responsive audience since Elvis Presley.
Wow. Yeah.
That's pretty good. Now,
I'm very proud of that. Yeah.
You didn't move around your hips at all or anything like that, did you?
I didn't. I sat on a chair. I sat on a little straight back chair, not even a stool, you know, but a little low straight back chair. And people started jumping on the stage. And the stage manager went crazy. He was trying to get them away. And Ed Sullivan himself came out and said, no, these kids or these children, these youth, whatever he said, they're behaving themselves and they can do that. And so he let it happen. That wasn't like a staged thing.
Yeah.
People from the audience in the, you know, pre-rehearsal came up on the stage, and Ed Sullivan allowed that to happen.
It's very cool. We're talking with Melanie, and I just want to get this out there because I want folks to know, if you're listening, I know we have people listening all over the country and the world, but you'll have a chance to actually see Melanie coming up September 18th. She's going to be at the Greenwood Coffee House in Ann Arbor, Michigan. September 29th in our neighborhood here at Johnny D's in Somerville. October 2nd at the Rochester Opera House in Rochester, New Hampshire. November 20th at Uncle Calvin's Coffee House in Dallas, Texas. And you can go to melaniesafka.com for her complete schedule. One of the things that I love to talk about when I have guests on, many of them have children, and they end up with the same kind of artistic talents, sometimes even better, sometimes different. But I understand you also have children who are also singer-songwriters.
Yeah, all three of my children are in music, and my son is my accompanist. unfortunately, he is a concert guitarist. He is amazing. He plays solo all over the world, and he is we write together. He's amazing because he hears these counter melodies that just bring the song to life and make it have dimension, just like a painter paints, and you can see the space. Well, that's what he does to the songs. He gives them even more of their space. And he's a writer. He's actually orchestrating right now upstairs in his room.
Now, what is his name?
Bo Jarrett.
Okay.
And I gave him a two-part first name because Shakarik was so complicated. And but now he's going as Shakarik, so irony. But my daughter Layla writes in Nashville. She writes with other people. That's what they do here. You know, they get together and write songs. I've never been really too good at that. But then Jordy, she's in Arizona. She just went to the Yazgur Farm Woodstock reunion every year. I don't know if you know, but there's a farm next door, and for years and years this couple was trying to get it legal to have assemble.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't let them, but a few years ago her husband died, and immediately the state gave her the right to have the concert. So she's been having these festivals every year. My daughter went, Yazgur Road, I think it's called. And it's the farm immediately next door.
Have you ever gone to it yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
I did a couple of times. It's a raggle-taggle gypsy kind of thing, and lots of people camp out, and it's a lot of fun. But I'll do it again, you know, but we'll see how that goes.
He's
just organizing it, and she, has to learn things about how to get sound together and all that.
Yeah,
that's the important stuff.
Are you still writing new stuff as well?
Yeah. In fact, I just recorded something. I'm so excited. It's absolutely the silliest song I ever wrote.
It can't be
to sing it live at Johnny B's.
It can't be sillier than Brand New Key.
Oh, it is. It is. I swear. I can't even believe I'm getting older and sillier.
Well, I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah. No, I'm really excited. I get that feeling, you know, after you write something, oh my God, this is like an earworm.
Yeah, I noticed on that you were selling a CD on your website.
Yes.
But I didn't get that, unfortunately. I usually like to get these in advance and kind of play with it, get a little autographed copy for the office. But we didn't get one here. But tell us a little bit about it. I know it's two CD set, right?
Oh, that's the live. What happened was last year I was on my way to some gigs, and I'd had one in Rockwell, Massachusetts, and I forget, some other places in New England. I flew in, and I had to go to the hospital for emergency surgery. It was unbelievable. life-threatening,
ooh,
you know, so I had to go. And I was there for a month. And during that time, a friend of a friend knew somebody who, Bo stayed, because, you know, I was in the hospital every day. Bo came in to see me. So he stayed with people who lived nearby in Boston and took a train in. But at that house, the people who owned a venue that I had performed at in 1984, the man said, in my basement, I think I have a board mix, which is not something you release. You know, it's just a reference.
Right, yeah.
But he kept it. And he played it to Bo, and Bo came into the hospital and all excited and said, Mom, this is an amazing performance. He said, it's really poorly, you know, recorded, of course, because it's a board mix. It's not intended for, you know, people to listen to.
Right.
He said, but Bo is like a genius at repair and fixing, and he's a technical whiz as well as musical, but
so he restored the original.
I think I can work with this. I can work with this tape. And he said, I'm so excited. Mom, on stage you said, and I have a son, and he's 4 years old. And he said, that was me. some great reality hit him, you know, that that he was 4 years old when he's listening to this. This way, he said, I was going back in time. So he really worked for months fixing this tape and, you know, getting everybody so you could hear every musical instrument. And you could even hear what I say. And what we did is we released it, the whole concert, without anything out. All of us talking and joking and the audience reaction. Of course, the audience is slim because they didn't have a mic on the audience, you know, so, but they're there and you can hear them. And it was a great night. It was a great night. And I had an all-star band and it was so exciting to find this. It was like, you know, a treasure, a hidden treasure.
Yeah.
So, it's out. It's called 1984. And, I think you get the real concert experience hearing it. It's two hours of music.
MelanieSafka.com. You can go on there and order a copy if you'd like and relive some of the great memories, unless you can go over to Johnny D's yourself and check it out, which is September 29th at Johnny D's in Somerville. It's really you know what's amazing, folks? You know how many records, and of course they don't make records anymore, but I'm still going to say records because that's what I
say
like.
Records.
I like it.
Well,
you know,
it's a recording, right? It's a recording.
It is
a record.
But I'm asking my audience out there, I'm playing a little trivia with them. How many records has Melanie sold in her career? Take a guess. All right. The answer is more than 80 million. That is unbelievable. Wow. Can you believe that?
No.
Wow. Now,
No. It's really, there were some, I mean, it was pretty amazing.
What a life you have! What a life you have led, and you are still leading. You have so many things that you're doing now. I mean, nothing slowed down. But you have actually won an Emmy Award. You opened a restaurant. You even wrote a musical about Wild Bill Hickok and Calamity Jane.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, what is to do? What is coming up? What are some of the things you might be doing?
Well, I wrote another musical after my husband passed away. It was I called it a dark musical comedy, but it was our life together.
Oh,
and
wow!
I suppose it was the only one I turned to. I just kept writing. I wrote our story. We were such an unlikely couple, and he was the reason you heard of Melanie at all, because he would be the one to get me out, and if there was a photo op at all, and he could possibly get me to stand next to John Lennon, he would.
How long were you married?
43 years.
Wow.
We were together for 45 years.
Wow.
And married for 43, and he produced my first record, my first everything. You know, I knew nothing about the music business, and never did, really, until he passed away, and then all hell broke loose. And I got a quick dose of reality.
Yeah, it can be very painful. I know my dad died very young, and when he died, my mother didn't even know how to do a checkbook. She was completely...
I didn't either.
Yeah.
I didn't have a checkbook. I didn't have anything. I mean, I knew nothing about any of that. You know, Peter was completely the one who took care of everything. And for good and bad, you know, because you're clueless when something happens. So I wrote it all down. It was called Melanie and the Record Man, and we performed it in Rochester, New York, and it was a sold out. The reviews were amazing, and I'm hoping that you know goes further, but right now I'm working on this Declaration of Human Rights. I'm really excited. I'm doing an event on September 21st in Nashville. It's just a free for everybody event, and I'm really interested in trying to get that awareness out there.
Well, make sure you send me whatever you're doing, because we'll promote it in my newspaper columns as well and things like that.
Oh, great.
Okay?
Great. Okay.
And we'll keep in touch, too.
Okay, great.
Because I enjoyed talking to you, Melanie.
Oh, thank you. Thanks a lot. Yeah, we have to keep this going.
Yeah, absolutely. Melanie Safka, everybody. Thank you so much. We'll see you. I unfortunately won't be there, but I hope folks that are listening will go there September 29th at Johnny D's in Somerville. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. And thanks so much
All
for
right.
coming.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.